We are. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Yes. Second hour on this Thursday. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here at Nissan Stadium. This is the home of the Transperfect Music City Bowl. About 3 hours away from kickoff, Tennessee and Purdue. Speaking of kickoff, there was a bowl game yesterday, Pinstripe Bowl, Yankee Stadium, and our man Tim Hasselbeck was in the booth. We saw him. That game took place, and unfortunately it wasn't much of a game. All Maryland. It was a rout. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Did you have your blowout material ready?
Did it sound like it? You weren't still watching fourth quarter?
I punted, kind of like Virginia Tech.
Yeah, you know, that was one of those situations where Virginia Tech, because of opt-outs, because of COVID, because of the transfer portal, coaching change, they really were kind of on the fringe of actually being ready to play a football game. Mm-hmm. And then Maryland, you know, has kind of heading the other direction. Had a coach in place that's done a nice job, recruited some good players. They hadn't been to a bowl game. I think they had one player on their team that had been to a bowl game in the past. So they were, you know, excited to be there. And, you know, that combination just, you know, didn't end up being a very good one for Virginia Tech. But, you know, the excitement that you saw out of Maryland for winning a bowl game after, you know, I think it was 2016, the last time they were in one, was real.
I told Chase and our listeners last hour, Dave Doering is now one of my new favorite head coaches at NC State. He said the NCAA stands for no clue at all. And you don't normally hear coaches go up to the NCAA and say things like that. But unfortunately, they didn't get to play their bowl game out in San Diego against UCLA. Now, there are worse places to be than San Diego and stuck without playing your game, but still, nonetheless, very frustrated. They found out through Twitter, and they found out through a reporter on Twitter.
Here's the question. Who pays for that week out in San Diego?
NC State?
Right.
Is that the wrong answer?
I think that's the right answer. Okay. And here's the issue with that. The game wasn't played. I'm not sure that they get any
get
of
paid.
The and so,
TV money.
So think about, you know, the expense of a whole team out there. You know, just between the lodging, the meals, the entertainment, the, you know, all of those different things. I have no idea what that costs. But, like, I'm guessing it could be $500,000, $1 million,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, potentially more. I mean, we're talking about a massive operation. And so now you just swallow that because, I think there are a number of factors. Like, the other question is this. Are there stipulations in the contracts of the coaches for a 10-win season? Are there... And so is that a forfeit? Is it not? I think there are huge implications to not playing these games. The TV money obviously being one of them, contracts being another, opportunities for the players another. And kind of to your point about when you find out, how you find out, all of that stuff, I think, you know, it matters.
Big Ben is kind of hinting that this may be his last home game, the Monday night game against the Browns. Do you believe that? Do you believe this is it for Roethlisberger?
Oh, I think he gave us the best hint with how he's played.
Wow. Yeah. I would expect that from me, from you. Bravo.
That was Bravo. Timmy off the top row.
Wow.
Like, was that kind of mean? I think it was kind of mean, but like, you know, at the same time, it's true. I remember, I'm not going to use the name of the quarterback, but I remember reaching out to a head coach one time that I had a good relationship with who was playing a quarterback that had been in the league for, you know, probably a decade at that point. And I'm like, hey, you know, what do you think of, you know, how's it going for this guy? And he said to me, He's like, he retired already. He just doesn't know it yet. So, look, I was, and you guys may remember, look, in the, they won 11 straight games last year. I think the Titans' COVID outbreak last year adversely affected the Pittsburgh Steelers and moved their bye week. I think it contributed to their fizzle at the end of the season. And, you know, I definitely was in the camp that I was going to be late to the party in terms of Pittsburgh being done. I think they've got an awesome general manager. I think their head coach does a really good job. I think the, you know, Ben, while he's not the same player that he once was, is still, you know, in generally speaking, I was anticipating him being better than, you know, a lot of the quarterbacks that are still in the league. And so I thought they'd be okay in the way they started off the season. I think there was elements that you could see that, and it just hasn't worked out. The offensive line play hasn't been great. The defense has not played as well as I thought they'd play. And Ben hasn't been able to kind of elevate the ships. And so, I don't think if you're Pittsburgh, it would make any sense to keep him going forward.
What's Arizona's excuse? Because they didn't have an 11-0 start. They had a 7-0 start.
Yeah.
It looked pretty darn good. And when I've watched them the last several weeks, especially against Indianapolis, a game where the Colts had been devastated by COVID, they didn't have their entire offensive line by the end of the game. They didn't have Darius Leonard, and they still couldn't beat the Colts. They just look like a team that's going the wrong way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, again, like things I've said, you know, like since prior to the season, I like them a lot. I thought Kyler Murray would be a guy that would be in the MVP conversation. Like, I think he's that much of a star. You know, my big concern, you know, in terms of what they could do was, all right, well, like, how about the head coach? Like, and, you know, I think when you're a head coach in the National Football League, and I've said this to you guys all season long as well, it's a marathon. Like, just think about the various things that you go through in a season and how you have to manage it in order to kind of weather the storms that you face. I mean, just think about what the Titans have gone through in terms of, all right, like, you lose your best offensive player. You have, guys at wide receiver have issues. You have COVID issues on the offensive line. You have injuries on the offensive line. Like, there are just constantly, constantly things that you're trying to manage. And so I do think, like, there's part of it with Cliff Kingsbury where you can be like, all right, look, yeah, their offense is fun. We get it. Like, air raid principles and that creativity and all that stuff is great. But talk to me about, what do you do when you lose one of your leaders on defense? What do you do when, you know, you kind of suffer the disappointment of losing Hopkins? You know, what do you do when, you know, you've got a quarterback in and out of the lineup? Like, I just think those are things that you prove your worth as a head coach, and I don't know that Kingsbury's done that.
You know, I was reading an interesting article yesterday after the show, and it was basically talking about Cliff Kingsbury's record. Like, he's always been good. This is going back to college. Mm-hmm. That he was very good the first half of the season, and the second half of the season, not so much. And the theory is, or at least not the theory, people talking to others that are, you know, in and around the program or in and around him, or people that follow the sport, understand how this works, is the book is that Kingsbury's very good about scripting plays and coming up with a game. He's not so good at adversity. He's not good at, you know how this works. I mean, you've played a high level in college and in the pros, and you understand you have to make adjustments, and adjustments are just part of the game. And they're saying this is where Kingsbury, like, he gets flying colors, big thumbs up on scripted plays, coming up with a game plan to beat somebody. But when it comes to adjustments, he gets a failing grade. He's not very good at adjustments. What do you make of that? Do you buy into that? Do you think Where do you stand on hearing something like that? Do you think there's some truth to that?
Yeah, and so like how do you define adjustments? The way I would describe it would be, and this I would say this around about being around the coaches that I've been around before that have had success. And so whether that's Andy Reid, whether it's Tom Coughlin, you know, guys like that, if it's like, all right, well, like find the common denominator with things they've done. I'll give you another one. John Fox would be another coach. So to me, if you are a detailed oriented coach, right? So like the very little things matter to you all the time. I think there's a discipline with that that is hard to maintain for your players. You know, Coughlin would always talk about, you know, his job was getting guys to do the little things that they didn't feel like doing. And so I think it's just like, it's like, yeah, we're good. Like, you know, he's supposed to get to 12 yards on that route, but he kind of got to 10 and we're fine with it. You know, we won the game and we're okay and we're going to let it go. Like there are coaches that are like that. And, you know, plenty of them have had some success, but I think the guys that have had sustained success, even in the wins and even in the victories, have a way to be like, hey, look, like I'm showing this to the entire team. Like we got away with this here, but 12 yards is 12 yards for a reason. And it didn't get us here, but it may get us sometime. And so even though you want to roll your eyes that I'm correcting you on something that happened that was not a negative play, like you need to trust me that this is going to matter and we're going to fix it even when it doesn't feel like it needs to be fixed. And so whether that's, you know, a protection adjustment, a blitz thing, a timing thing, whatever it is, like always being on that stuff. I think that stuff matters. And I think the really, really great coaches, like Harbaugh, you know, Belichick, like I think those guys are doing that stuff.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every week. So when you watch Tua play quarterback for Miami, the Titans' next opponent, what have you seen from him this year that makes you think, okay, there's something to work with? I think moving forward, he's going to be fine. Or when you watch him, do you just see that he is what he is and they're going to just have to deal with that?
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine. I think that there are, you know, unrealistic expectations sometimes on guys in terms of what they're supposed to be immediately. You know, it hasn't been as great for him as it has been for other guys. Their wins recently are definitely against teams that, you know, are not necessarily the most impressive. That being said, look, you still have to win them, and good teams have lost to bad teams. And so I think you have to give them credit for all that stuff. And here's what I would say about Tua. Tua has a suddenness about him, like kind of a compact suddenness nature to how he plays that I do think is special. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, when you get into the run-pass option game, which is becoming more and more prevalent, it's becoming more and more of what Miami is doing, he's really, really special at it. I mean, he is. Like, he's done a lot of it throughout his career. He's outstanding at it, and I think it's, you know, it helps create plays against good looks, which, you know, everyone's always trying to get. So, look, you guys had some change. He was coming off of a huge injury going into his rookie season, and so I think in some ways he's been unfairly judged, and I think he can be a good player. So, yeah, I think that anybody playing them right now has challenges in terms of defending some of the stuff they're doing offensively.
You mentioned the opponents, but as you said, they've won seven in a row, which is pretty darn impressive. How much credit do you give Brian Flores for that run? Because when he was hired, I know a lot of people really liked that move and liked what he could be as a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've told you this, so I'll say it again for full disclosure on this. He's a college teammate, you know, I like him a lot. And I think he's got a great makeup to be a head coach. You know, in terms of the job that he's done, people were calling for his job. And I think in many respects, people thought that he was going to be let go. So I've been impressed with the resolve. Just like we were talking about Kingsbury and the ability to adjust or focus on the details, I think that when you look at what has happened in Miami, I think you have to go, wait a second. They started off how? There was this type of pressure. There was, you know, criticism of the quarterback. He's not the guy. The head coach is going to get fired. There have been coordinator changes after, you know, the previous season. Like, I think there are a lot of there was a lot of heat in Miami, and I think he's done a remarkable job of weathering that storm.
Yeah, no doubt about that. This weekend, I have predicted Cincinnati, barring any more COVID issues, that I think that they'll beat Kansas City. Do you think I'm crazy, or do you think that's actually got a chance of happening?
I think it has a chance of happening. I think the issue for Cincinnati is that you know, their weak link is their offensive line play. And one of the things that's gone on with Kansas City recently is they've rushed the passer really well. So, you know, as good as they've been offensively, and honestly, as good as they've been on defense, I think the problem ends up being they're going to have a hard time protecting. And Burrow makes a lot of plays outside of the design of the offense, but ultimately I think Kansas City's pass rush ends up becoming an issue for the Bengals.
Does Burrow show you enough to make you think that he can become one of the elite quarterbacks in this league, or is it still too early?
I think you've seen enough. I really do. You know, for full context on it, you'd be hard-pressed to find, you know, a better supporting cast in terms of running back, tight end, receivers. But that being said, like, you need to make it happen at the quarterback position. And I think what we've seen from him is clutch moments. We've seen big plays. We've seen him create things on his own when it's not been perfect. But there's also something I think is remarkable when you see a guy play with a ton of courage in the pocket, which is no doubt something that he does. So I think that he can be a superstar. I think there are elements of what he's done that if you kind of continue this type of talent around him, that he could end up being a league MVP type of player.
Who gets the number one seed in the AFC? Does Kansas City beat Cincinnati this weekend? Are they going to be the one seed?
Yeah, I like so much about Kansas City. You guys know I'm a massive Andy Reid fan. I think he just does such a good job. Their quarterback is the best in the conference. Their defense has played really well. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but, like, they essentially, you know, they had a stretch where they were giving up around 10 points a game. Like, and I want to say for like 5 weeks or something, you know, they were averaging that. And some of it was, you know, going back to the Green Bay game and playing Jordan Love. And so that could look different if Aaron's playing and stuff. But, you know, again, like, you're talking about in pro football holding teams to around 10 points. And then, oh, by the way, you know, you're good enough offensively that even without Travis Kelce, 9 guys can catch the football and you can, you know, and score, you know, in the 30s. Like, to me, I don't know, that says a lot about your football team.
All right, last thing. You know, we've had this conversation many times, especially last year with Derrick Henry's season. Let's remove the quarterbacks and let's just say there was a, you know, however, pick a name, a great, and call it the quarterback award, which is the MVP of the league, kind of like baseball. Do your Cy Young for your pitchers. So there's a quarterback award, so they're excluded from this. The NFL MVP this season is whom? So you're excluding quarterbacks.
Okay. Cooper Kupp, maybe?
Interesting. Okay.
That's an interesting answer.
I like that. I mean, we were kind of batting this around. I mean, obviously Jonathan Taylor, I think, needs to be on the list. Cooper Kupp's got to be on there.
I'll give you my number two guy.
What about T.J. Watt?
No, nope. My number two guy would be on the defensive side of the ball, but it would be Micah Parsons.
Micah Parsons. Okay, what about Diggs? Does Diggs belong in that discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, he could be in the discussion. Micah Parsons, you just go back to the beginning part of the year. Look, they're playing him at defensive end with his hand on the ground. Like, drafted him as a stand-up middle linebacker. And then the stuff that he has done, like covering people in space, running to the football, playing with his hand on the ground, like, I mean this, and I know that a lot of people have picked up on it or are paying attention to it, but, like, there was a game against Washington, I think the first game, where, you know, he runs through Brandon Sheriff, the right guard, who is, I mean, a 320-pound man and a very good player. Like, that, and you're like, whoa. And then all of a sudden you get him matched up on a back, and backs can't hold up in protection. Like, I don't think it can be overstated how special of a player he is. And if you think about how bad that defense was a year ago, the impact he's made is incredible. And then when you look at Cooper Kupp, look, they lost Robert Woods. The quarterback play, surprisingly to me, has been very uneven. So to think that he's done what he's done in that situation, I think is really impressive. And you just look at where they sit in the NFC West.
See, this is why I wish they would do this, because I think you could get this type of response every year. I think we could sit here and do a whole segment and have a great conversation about NFL MVP, about all these guys in the league that aren't quarterbacks. And I think you could make a strong case for a lot of guys. And that to me is what makes it fun. And I wish they would do that, because there's a lot of worthy guys that'll never win the MVP because it basically goes to, I know, a quarterback, which, you know, you enjoy, but we could have this discussion about Watt and Kupp and Diggs and Parsons, and, you know, we could put together a really good list of guys. Who's the guy in Chicago who's got a ton of sacks?
Quinn.
Quinn's got, what, 17 and a half sacks?
Yeah. I mean, here's what I would say. Here's what I would say. I was asked about this. I said, what would it take for a non-quarterback to win the MVP again? And I think there are a couple factors. You would have to have a year where a quarterback did not have an absolutely absurd year. So you would need, you know, something to happen where it's like, oh, the guy's had a good year, but, oh, well, that was a dud against the Saints like Brady had, or Kyler Murray missed a few games. So I think you would have to have that happen. And unfortunately, I think, and then you would have to have a record-breaking type season. So like you're saying, you know, 22 sacks or, rushing yard record.
2,000 yards, right.
You know, all those different things, right? You have to have those things. But here's the other factor that I think plays into it. That player that has the record-breaking season, his market and his primetime games matter. And, you know, teams like the Titans or, you know, the Cardinals and, you know, things like, you know, teams like that, you know, one don't like to hear it, but it's true. Look, I just, you know, if a quarterback in Chicago has a really, really good year, but a running back in Tennessee has a record-breaking year, the quarterback in Chicago is going to win the award. It's just going to happen.
Yep. To me, I would stand up. My case would be for Jonathan Taylor. This is all I'm going to say. They're 9-6. Nine times this year he's gone over 100 yards. Six hasn't. When he goes over 100, they win. When he doesn't, they lose. MVP of the league. I mean, can you say any more about the importance of that guy to the Colts? I mean, that's a pretty compelling stat, is it not?
Well, I mean, don't you think you could build that same stat for Cooper Kupp? Or don't you think you could
build that
same, you know, similar type stats for Micah Parsons and then compare last year?
Well, I would say it's a different because typically if you're behind, you're throwing, you're not running. So if you're behind, you may compile a lot of stats through receivers because all you're doing is slinging the ball around. Typically when you're behind, you shut down the run, you abandon the run. You know what I mean? So sometimes the receivers...
What if you have 11 wins and you've got 130 catches?
Which is what he's going to have, an absurd amount of catches, for sure. I know. No, I'm not going to argue against Cooper Kupp. He's had an unbelievable year. Tim, You've had an unbelievable year with us. Happy New Year, and we look forward to talking to you in 2022.
Sounds good. Happy New Year, guys. See ya.
Tim Hasselbeck every week joins us. We enjoy our chats with him. He's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. We'll come back more of the DDC here from Nissan Stadium next. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals. Check out Nashville's best deals. Right now, the great deal is for Downtown Dollars, where we are, $150. Digital gift card for only $100. The gift card is redeemable at hundreds.
You all right there?
Are we back in Gallatin? Am I having a stroke on the air again?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just joining the show here, guys, but I'm wondering what's been going on in the press box there.
Bill Blur is back.
You know, I thought it was straight eggnog that we've been drinking that they put out, but I don't think it's straight eggnog. They may have a little bit extra kick. All right, let's try this again. The gift card is redeemable for hundreds of downtown Nashville shops, restaurants, and more. With the Downtown Dollars, you can spend at maybe your old favorite spots or all the new spots that are open down here. End of the year blowout is also going on our website. 75% off Bad Axe Throwing, which is in Nashville, Nashville Armory, and the Beanbag Coffee and Tea Shop. You can check out other deals from the Woodhouse Spa, Brooklyn Bowl. I was on a roll until then. Seafood Sensation and more. Check out those deals at thegamenashville.com/deals.
You made it.
Was there something about a Haas in there?
Old Haas.
Hey, Haas.
Golly.
Listen here.
Haas Cartwright? Yeah, he's definitely dead.
Old Haas Radborn, great pitcher from the Hall of Fame. Back in the day.
One of the first World Series winners.
Yes, Old Haas. A great Twitter follow, by the way. Old Haas Radborn. He is old school.
Named my fantasy baseball team after him this year. Elite mustache.
Back here on Darren Dunnick and Chase. Now the crew, the gang is all here together. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe at Nissan Stadium. Elijah Campbell manning things at our Hillside Medical Game Studio. Willie Dunnick in Columbus, Ohio. Predators and Blue Jackets tonight at 6 o'clock. I'll have pregame at 5. Willie and his crew will have their pregame on Bally Sports at 5:30. Good conversation there with Tim Hasselbeck. I do think if the league, this falls under common sense, and the NFL is obviously, I'm not going to compare them to the NCAA. They're much more progressive, more outside the box thinking than the NCAA.
They have a clue
than the NCAA. But why not give the quarterbacks their award, and then let everybody else fight for an MVP award? And I do think that, you know, Derrick Henry would have won it last year. This year, I mean, let's ask Willie. I don't even know if he heard the conversation. Let's not tell him who Tim said, but let's just ask Willie. Exclude quarterbacks. We're pretending they have their own MVP award. Now it's everybody else for an MVP award. Kind of like in baseball, right? The pitchers, give them their Cy Young award, and then everybody else is up for MVP. Who would you have as this year's NFL MVP?
Ooh. You know, I think I would look at Aaron Donald. I think he's still a guy that it all starts with when you play the Rams. If you can't handle him, you're in big, big trouble. He makes so many people so much better. I would have to consider him. You know, I think if we're going to be fair, if we would have given this award hands down to Derrick Henry last year, which we would have, then I do think you have to consider Jonathan Taylor. He has had a great year, for sure. But I think a lot of it,
don't you think?
Yeah, I think you got to consider it. I think he's a great back, but that offensive line for them. Now you might just look back and say, look, they had their offensive line out against Arizona. He still got his 100 yards. He did have the long pop early in the game. He got about half the yards on one
early
run.
Early in the game, his first week. Run was 47 yards.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. I think that running scheme and the offensive line, I think it's the highest paid offensive line in football. I think that has something to do with his success. But at the same time, you got to give him props. So those would be my two.
Okay. Do you know who Tim said?
Who did he say?
Your favorite guy. Cooper
My
Kupp.
Favorite guy?
Oh, yeah.
Cooper Kupp. Oh, man, he is good. You know, we've talked about
Willie
this
got excited
you know,
there.
As it pertains. Well, yeah, he's Chase and I's least favorite player for a specific reason. But I do think as it pertains to the Titans game this week, a lot of what the Dolphins do with Jaylen Waddle is right out of the Cooper Kupp playbook. I think he's sort of the leader in how they use him as sort of a quasi running back. You know, it's almost like running plays.
But is he any different than Wes Welker?
I did not see the reverse jet sweep type of plays to Wes Welker. There are some similarities, but I think with the wide receiver screens and the jet sweep reverses where you throw that little pitch, which is actually goes down as a pass, but it's really like a handoff in front of him. Welker was more of the short hitches. You know, I don't think it was as many screens where you just get the ball in his hands and let him run. Kupp can do everything, right? He doesn't just do those things. And obviously Waddle can do everything too. But I think Waddle is kind of like the poor man's Cooper Kupp and not far behind. You know, we were talking yesterday with Kevin Harlan about some of the milestones that Waddle is going to hit here. But I think it's a real innovation. I'd love to hear more from Tim on exactly what he's seeing. What is the difference between Cooper Kupp and a Wes Welker and some of those receivers? Danny Amendola and who am I forgetting? Who's the other guy? Edelman.
Edelman and Welker, I think I wouldn't put Amendola in there because I don't think he's at the level.
No, I'm just thinking of the type, those possession type guys that would catch short passes. They're not really run at after catch guys. Cooper Kupp and Jaylen Waddle are just get the ball in their hands with blockers, creative ways, and let them run. They can get around the end on a sweep.
Well,
Wes Welker wasn't taking reverses.
No, but you're right. Cooper Kupp is leading the league in yards after catch.
Yeah, absolutely. Just so they get the ball to him, even if it's, in the flat, even if it's just a quick toss to the outside, or just bring him through on a jet sweep and put blockers in front of him, he'll do the job.
Tim also brought up Micah Parsons. I brought up Trayvon Diggs. I think T.J. Watt would be in that discussion. The NFL, I wish they would do this because I think it would, it would create some really good conversation, I think. So, every year you would have about five, six, seven guys. You can make a really strong case for being the MVP, but we all know that nobody's going to waste their airtime, whether it's radio or television, on these guys. Unfortunately, it's not right because they know it's going to go to Aaron Rodgers or it's going to go to Tom Brady. Or it's going to go to Patrick Mahomes. But
how would that not be?
Yeah.
Well, but how would that not be the same as they already have the offensive player of the year and the defensive player of the year? So with what you're saying, if you do a quarterback award, which is basically currently the MVP, I mean, they have the offensive player of the year and the defensive player of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if you necessarily need that. But, I mean, you are recognizing both sides of the ball, but you also have – rookie offensive player of the year and rookie defensive player of the year, which, by the way, is going to be Micah Parsons and it's going to be Jaylen Waddle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is...
Don't you think, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think Waddle's going to win offense?
Sure.
Parsons is going to win defense?
Sure. No doubt. But I guess what I'm saying is with what you're throwing out there, they kind of already do
but
that.
But those awards aren't viewed prestigious, are they?
Okay, so how do you change
that? Because we don't... Do we get? Do we really view that? What do we talk about? We talk about the MVP, and that's it.
Right, but I mean, even if you do it the way that you're talking about, where you change the what is currently the MVP to a quarterback only award, and then you have
another MVP, you're just basically doing exactly what baseball. But you can win both, by the way. You can win both.
Right.
That's okay.
But I mean, you're basically just changing the names of what's already there, is what I'm saying. Like. Except for you're adding the caveat of you could win. But, I mean, Derrick Henry won the Offensive Player of the Year. He could have won MVP.
And how excited did that get people and how much talk was there? You know what I mean? It just
I know, but
it doesn't have the same oomph as the MVP. Doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it just doesn't have the same oomph. Like how many – we've got all these debate shows now. How many times do you hear them debating who's going to be the offensive MVP and the defensive MVP on their airwaves?
I get that. But and I guess it's always been like I viewed it as, okay, if Aaron Rodgers wins the MVP, Aaron Rodgers' offense, why if he's winning the MVP, why wouldn't he also win Offensive Player of the Year? Which they've made it separate awards, but it's kind of like you sit there and you go with the way that it's all phrased is, well, wouldn't the most valuable player also be the best on offense?
Right.
Well, exactly. I think that's a really interesting debate because, first of all, I think you have to organize your awards. One thing that you like is the tradition of the baseball and the hockey awards. It's very clear cut. They get special names. It's the Cy Young. It's the Rookie of the Year. And it works really well. In hockey, you've got your
Norris,
each one of them has a name at the heart. Right. Yep. You've got a specific category, and you try to make each one prestigious. Football has never really had that. You know, you've got the Sporting News used to have their award, and then you got the NFL's got this, but it doesn't have the same organization. That's really strange given how prestigious football is in general. But I think it would be great to have the quarterback award, and then you know, this is where you'd have to draw the line. Are you going offense and defense? And because I think it'd be great to recognize the best offensive player who's not a quarterback, because that's where you can have the debate of Cooper Kupp versus Jonathan Taylor versus Jalen Waddle, whoever.
Are you saying do two MVPs, like an offensive MVP and a defensive MVP?
Well, maybe you just take out the word MVP and you say, maybe you do it like hockey and you
give them a name.
Each one have a category, and then if you want to have an MVP on top of all of it, then you do that. But you have like that quarterback award,
the Joe Montana award. I'm just throwing
the Joe Montana award. Yeah, Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, pick
Johnny Unitas. Right, you can just pick a name, a great, and call it that. And then
you have something for offense. You know, the Walter Payton. You know, you don't go by position, but you just take the rest of the offense. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and then you have a defense.
What if you named one of
these
awards? It's
hard. It's tough.
What if you named
one of these? You got to acknowledge somewhere in here that the quarterback has so much of the spotlight that it does deserve a special consideration, separate from everybody else.
I propose the John Madden Award
for offense
for something. I mean, you know, put his name on something. I just had a texter that said the same thing.
Yeah. Well, that's does the texter leave their name?
Matthew from Paris.
Matthew, thank you. Good suggestion. I like that.
Yeah. Well, there's the All Madden team. And what that means, that was something that had a very distinct definition for all those years. That was a really cool thing in that documentary. By the way, if you have not seen the Madden documentary that Fox did, it was very, very well done. Tom Rinaldi put it together. I thought that was really cool. And selecting the All Madden team was that was something that they aired every year in the week between the Super Bowl, the championship games and the Super Bowl. So that's got a pretty distinct image when you come up with it, like who makes the All Madden team.
Willie, tell everybody about Lee Company.
All right, be glad to do that. Lee Company, 615-567-1000. The Predators are back in action tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Great to have the flow of the league starting to come back here. Lee Company is a proud sponsor of our coverage of the Nashville Predators. And when you go down to Bridgestone Arena on New Year's Day, when the Blackhawks come to town and you ring in 2022, you'll see the Lee Company display all around the grounds of Smashville. So, Lee Company, what do? They help you with your heating, cooling, plumbing, and electric service. They're all over that for you. And they've got a program called the Home Maintenance Plan that is something every year that helps your house stay on top of things. You got to love being ahead of the curve when it comes to managing your house. You don't want to think about it all the time. If you're like me, you have no idea what's going on. You can't go down into the basement, take a look at the furnace, and be able to check and see what's right, what's wrong down there. No clue. That's me. That's why I have Lee Company and the Home Maintenance Plan. They come in and check it for me every year, plus the air conditioning every year, the plumbing system, the electric system. And when they find the small problems before they become big problems, you get discounts on those repairs. Gotta love it. Home Maintenance Plan from Lee Company. How do you get it? Call them, 615-567-1000, or go online at leecompany.com and make that online appointment. Lee Company, proud sponsor Nashville Predators.
We're live at Nissan Stadium. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe with you. Elijah Campbell at our Hillside Medical Game Studio. Willie Donick in Columbus, Ohio. Predators and Blue Jackets tonight. 6 o'clock puck drop. 5 o'clock pregame here on these airwaves. If you're looking for a place to hang and watch, how about the Predators Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Bearcade tonight? Yes, they'll have drink specials. Plus, you can be entered to win Predators tickets and watch the game tonight. It's the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade that's located at 114 2nd Avenue South, downtown. So keep that in mind. Back-to-back situation for the Predators after the loss last night in Washington. Do we think UC Saros gets the night off, or John Hines has been known to just roll with UC Saros? So I don't know. What will we see there? What were your overall thoughts of last night's game?
Number one, just to answer your question, they did go with UC Saros in the back-to-backs when they had the depleted lineup right before the break. But in this case, you take a look, he did have obviously a long rest. The Predators hadn't played since December 17th, but they do play again Saturday afternoon, January 1st, against the Blackhawks. So I think there's a good chance you'd see Riddick tonight in goal. Last night, I think you have to look at the start of the game. Both teams hadn't played in a long time, but Washington, to their credit, they did their thing early. They jumped on the Predators, who I thought made some uncharacteristic defensive breakdowns. If you look at what the Predators do well, most nights they don't give up a lot of easy big-time chances. But early in the game, they had some breakdowns where it was bang, bang, backdoor. What can your goalie really do? You're asking the goalie to be Superman. But to their credit, you got to give you look at Nashville and the way they came back. They will themselves. They get confrontational. They start pushing people around. They stir it up, and that seems to get them going. And they willed themselves back in the game, gave themselves a chance. It was, you know, it wasn't exactly easing back in after a long break. That was a tough, intense game. So I thought it was good. And what you have to hope for is that it serves you well tonight, because the Blue Jackets will be in the position that the Predators were in last night, haven't played in a long time. So I'm wondering about the start tonight.
I think they're going to obviously have a better start because they know it's a point of emphasis, right?
Yep. I think they'll be focused, have more juice.
Yeah, Matthias Ekholm said the start is what did them in last night. He said their first period did them in, which is interesting because I listened to John Hines' comments because we played it in postgame and I was listening. He said he didn't have as much of a problem with their first period.
The players did.
I know. That's why I thought it was interesting. Like, yeah. The head coach was like, we did some – first period wasn't as bad as Bryce said. You know, obviously they gave up 3 goals, but he said there was a lot to like about the game.
Yeah, I definitely –
he didn't have as big of an issue with the first period as maybe a guy like Matthias Ekholm did.
Well, I definitely think that Washington was the better team in the first period. In the second period, you saw – more of the Predators team we've seen in that 7-game winning streak than you did in the first. So, and the head coach obviously knows a lot, knows what he wants to see, and I guess if he saw some good things, that's fine. But I didn't. I saw a sluggish team, and I tend to agree more with Matthias Ekholm.
I didn't think they had the zip, but once they, you know, what do they do? They've done this a number of times. They start mixing it up. They create confrontation. It's not always a fight. But if something happens in front of their bench, they're going to start pushing, shoving. You know, after the whistle in front of the net, they'll mix it up. And that seems to get them going a lot of times.
Well, Borowiecki and Tom Wilson.
Yeah, and honestly, I thought that was a very bad call because that's not the definition of instigator.
Well, John Hines definitely wasn't happy about it.
No, he wasn't. So Tom Wilson, of course, is one of the most notorious bad boys in the game, physical intimidators. He drilled Ryan Johansson with a legal check. But that is what the Predators do. They stand up for one another. Borowiecki, he knows if he goes in there and fights him right away, then that's an instigator. So what did he do? He went up and talked to him. He challenged him. He got up in his face. They skated around. Then Tom Wilson drops the gloves and decides to fight him. That's not an instigator on Borowiecki.
No.
So I thought that was a very poor interpretation of the instigator rule. But nonetheless, the Predators, they had already scored one. That happens. The Predators kill off the penalty. They score two more and tie it up. So they get inspired. They get jacked up as a group with what Terry Crisp calls rat pack toughness. You know, they've got waves of players. You know, Crispy has longed for a team like this. Crispy would love coaching this team because,
oh my gosh,
the Predators have never had a group like this where they have the layers of toughness from Borowiecki to Olivier to Trenin to Janot. McCarron in there now mixing it up.
By the way, Tanner Janot basically going, Tom Wilson at the end of the game, come on, big boy.
Yeah.
Let's go. I think
I love that.
I love that. He's like, let's go. And yeah. You know, Tom Wilson, probably not too many people in the league that say, come on, let's go. You know, I was like, I loved it. How do you not, how do you not
all,
love this team?
But they all want to join in. They all have each other's back. And that helps them. And I think it helped them play better. Now, the problem is they got in there, they get the game tied, and it's down, going down to the closing minutes. Unfortunate play. Four-on-four ends. The Predators are going on a power play. Mikhail Granlund's coming out of the penalty box. Evgeny Kuznetsov makes a great play, comes out of the corner, and makes a perfect shot into that upper corner. Hats off to him. But good hockey game. You know, you put that effort in there every night, you're going to win your share.
We'll come back. Silly underdog picks to start the third hour, but first a word about BetMGM.
Yes, BetMGM, they welcome you with a special offer on New Year's Day. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on any sport to win $200 in free bets. All you have to do is use the bonus code 1025GAME200 when you make your first bet. Enjoy the holiday like never before and score a big win on your very first bet at the King of Sportsbooks. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Use that code 1025GAME200 to win $200 in free bets when you bet on any sport on New Year's Day. Start the new year off right and discover why nothing beats a win at BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Tennessee only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.